thing about our lives and what we've been through. You like the fight, but some of us don't.
Not your best argument, Cole said, gesturing to the team, considering today worked out pretty damn well.
He's telling the truth, Alice insisted. We never would have asked him to risk sending the files digitally. He only brought us printouts and only a few to prove his affiliation with the league, or whatever the hell it is you're calling yourselves now.
Liam blew out a harsh breath. We can use the footage Alice captured today, deliver a media package to their contacts to run, a package that carries an actual message, that proves something, even if it's just that people have nothing to fear from us kids. You don't get it. It doesn't matter if we get all the kids out of the camps and blast through every damn fence and wall between us and them. If we don't change people's minds about us, then where the hell are those kids going to go?
Cole crossed his arms over his chest and said simply,
Bye, Liam.
I had started to turn, intending on following Cole to the tunnel, anger making my head throb, erasing every last trace of light inside my heart, when a voice piped up.
If he has to go, then so do I.
It was the green girl I'd seen a few nights ago, the one who had painted the crescent moon on Liam's helmet. That moment when I'd questioned who she was finally made sense. The symbol was how Alice identified him during their meetings.
For any particular reason? Cole prompted.
I covered for him.
She tossed her dark hair back over her shoulder.
I knew he was going to meet Alice, and I didn't tell anyone.
Me too, said Lucy, wringing her hands red. I lied about supplies he never brought in, and I don't really want to fight. I'm sorry.
Ditto, Kylie said. Not sorry, though. And me,
piped up Anna, one of the Greens who'd made it out of Los Angeles.
I'm the one that showed him how to access and download the files.
Beside me, Zach scratched his head and looked up at the ceiling.
I might have showed him how he could, if he needed to, establish a contact procedure with someone.
I'm the one who asked Senator Cruz how she contacted someone in Amplify, said another one of the Greens.
So I guess I'm out too?
Me too, since...
Cole held up a hand, interrupting Sarah.
Okay, Christ, I get it, Spartacus. Y'all made your point.
He glanced over at me. I lifted a shoulder, letting him decide this one. I didn't trust my judgment in that moment, and, truthfully, if they were all interested in sabotaging our hit on Thurmond, I wouldn't have been sorry to see them go off and live somewhere safe and away, especially if Harry delivered on his promise of trained soldiers.
You get one shot, he told them. Prove to me this works the way you want it to, and we'll adapt our plan. But...
His voice turned sharp as the kids behind us began to chatter excitedly. I stepped closer to him, wanting to use Cole as a shield from the now obvious truth that most, if not all of them, had known what Liam was planning, and none of them had been inclined to let me in on it. They probably think it serves you right, a voice whispered in my head, for keeping them in the dark about getting rid of the agents. But the difference was... That had only been done to protect them. Cole was absolutely right. Liam interrupting a carefully choreographed op and introducing an unknown variable could have ended badly for all of us, including the kids we were trying to rescue. A fresh wave of anger steamed through me.
But, he continued, you all stay here, and you cannot, for any reason, leave the ranch without getting permission. That includes you, Carrots.
Alice colored at the nickname, absently reaching up to smooth back her red hair. He took a step closer to her, lowering his voice.
I knew that look, the way his blue eyes hooded,
how the otherwise friendly smile betrayed nothing of the contempt he felt, only his low, rough voice.
If you reveal our location to anyone at Amplify, I'll know.
Alice leaned toward Cole, her arms crossed over her chest. One brow went up in challenge.
No, you won't. But I'm not in the business of getting kids killed, unlike you.
Hey, I warned, and clearly Liam must have mentioned something about me because she finally backed off.
All right. Everyone good? Everyone cool?
Cole nodded, motioning for the others to start nodding too.
Great. Let's get the supplies off the bus and everything organized. Someone needs to tell me about the PSF's faces when they saw you.
The tension broke at that, Gav busting out laughing as he relayed a story about how one of the PSFs may or may not have pissed himself when he realized what he was up against. Zoo tried to catch my hand as I walked past her, but, in all honesty, I just wanted to be alone. I didn't care if it hurt her feelings. I didn't care that she was worried about me, and I didn't want to pretend that I was fine with this outcome. Losing focus was wasting time. It meant more dead kids I wouldn't be able to save. I wanted to check in with Nico about any news of Kate and whether or not Vida and Chubbs had checked in. Then I wanted to finalize the details for how I'd be taken back into Thurmond. I burned off what extra energy I had by taking the tunnel between the ranch and the garage at a run. The frustration drained out of me with each strike of my boots against the cement. I was through the kitchen, passing by bowls of pasta and pretzels the Oasis kids had picked up on their way, if I had to guess, to eat in the big room, when I finally heard him calling my name. I didn't slow down. Didn't let any part of me soften the armor of anger I wore. Liam ran to catch up to me.
Ruby! I want to talk to you.
Believe me? I told him. You don't. I continued down the hall until he grabbed my arm and spun me around. I stared up into his face, looking past the strain, the shadow of scruff along his jaw and cheeks, to the intensity of his eyes, and for a single instant, my body confused the need to kill him with the need to kiss him. I yanked myself away and pushed the door open to the stairwell.
Are you mad because I didn't tell you, or because you know I'm right?
He demanded.
Because as far as I can tell, it's both.
I think Cole gave you a pretty decent outline of the many reasons to be pissed at you, I said, turning as I reached the first landing. He was right at my heels, trying to back me into the same dark corner I'd stolen a kiss from him in. And somehow, that only made me angrier, like he was doing it on purpose.
I'm right, Ruby, he said, taking my wrist again.
Touch me one more time, I warned him, and you'll regret it. He released his hold on me and backed off.
Please, listen to me.
No, I said. I don't even want to look at you right now. Liam's smile turned mocking.
Because I dare to disagree with Cole, who could never be wrong, not about anything.
I whirled back on him, shoving at his chest with both hands.
Because you came within an inch of being blasted away at the wrong end of Zack's gun. Because you could have died, and I wouldn't have been able to stop it. Because you didn't think, and everything we've been working toward could have fallen up.
His eyes flashed, blue flames, as he pulled me to him. He kissed me. He kissed me the way I'd kissed him in the forest at the edge of the East River camp. In the darkness, the smell of damp earth and dust and leather wrapped around us. Hard, desperate, his hands fisted in my hair, mine in his jacket. He kissed me, and I let him, because I knew it was the last time. I pushed him away, feeling something in my chest tear wide open as the cold air filled the space between us. Liam braced himself against the wall, trying to catch his breath. I fought the stupidest urge to sit down on the stairs and cry. He took a shaking breath.
Anna said.
She said that Nico's been working secretly on some kind of virus. She thinks it's for the Thurmond hit. It's the kind that someone will have to go in and install before any kind of attack can happen.
His voice sounded hollow.
Would you happen to know anything about that?
I looked away.
Jesus, Ruby,
he said quietly. He was giving me the chance to come clean about the Thurmond hit, but nothing, least of all him, was going to prevent me from doing this. I didn't need his approval.
They will kill you,
he said, anger seeping into the words.
You know this. They know what you are and what you can do. Are you going to sway the whole camp? Get them under your control the way Clancy did at East River? They aren't going to let you leave that camp alive. And you don't even care, do you?
He scrubbed at his face, letting out a sound of pure aggravation.
Do I even need to ask who put this idea in your head? He's not one of us, Ruby. He's not. And you still side with him. You tell him the things you used to tell me. Tell me what happened. Tell me how to make this right between us again. I don't understand how we broke down. I don't understand why he has this hold on you.
I don't have to explain myself to you. I felt a cold drop of ice spread down my spine at my own words, no matter how true they were.
You used to want to,
he said.
Do you want to know why I didn't tell you about Alice and Amplify? I came close 100 times. I almost told you that night we were in the garage, but I stopped myself because lately it doesn't matter what I say. You and Cole think it's wrong, stupid, or naive. Damn it, I am sick to death of that word. I'm not stupid. I'm not blind either. I can keep us fed. I can fix every damn fixture that's falling off. I can make sure all of the cars run. I can find us the one real shot we have doing some lasting good in a world that's already too violent. But that's not enough. I don't even register, do I? Not to him. Not to you. Not anymore.
I said nothing. Felt nothing. Was nothing.
I'm trying to think of what comes after. How we'll move on with our lives when this is all over. It's what we talked about before. I don't want any of these kids to live their lives stained with pain and regret and blood. I don't want that for you either. We can do good work. We can make the whole damn world see that we're good kids in a shitty situation. Please. Ruby, please. Cole is going to walk you right over a cliff, and he's going to be holding your hand the entire time.
I held his gaze a moment longer, letting the words expand, filling the parts of me that were crumbling.
Think of the girls, I thought. Cabin 27. Sam. All of those thousands of kids who'd been left behind as I got out. Ashley's face, the dead eyes staring up at me, the accusation I'd read in them. Where were you? Why didn't you come sooner?
If I've hurt you half as bad as you're hurting me, he said, his voice ragged, then God, just kill me. I can't stand this. Say something. Say something!
I could sacrifice this, the thing I wanted most, for them, and the trade would never balance out, not fully. I owed them more than my love. I owed each of those girls my life. They needed to know what I'd felt today as we pulled out of Oasis. We would find the cure if it was the last thing I did on this earth, and it would be waiting for them when they got out. They would know true freedom, not because they'd be able to shed their terrible abilities, the thing that marked them as freak, because they'd be able to make every choice that had been denied to them for years. They could go anywhere, be with the people they loved. In the end, it didn't matter what happened to me. I understood what Nico had meant now, when he talked about making amends. I couldn't go back and change the things that had happened to them, but I could sure as hell put them in charge of their own futures. It would be worth it. Losing this, it would feel worth it. One day. But now, it only hurt. It felt like tearing myself into pieces. The end came with silence, and I knew Liam felt it, even if he was too stubborn to admit it to himself. There was nothing left to say. I turned and started back up the stairs.
"I'll be around," he called after me, "when you decide you want to find me."
Swallowing the painful lump in my throat, I kept my back to him and said, "Don't bother waiting." I was at the top of the stairs, pushing the door open, when he said,
"Maybe I won't."
The door swung shut behind me, clicking quietly back into place. I let my body seize up, the pain tearing through me as I went into the nearest bunk room and collapsed down onto one of the beds. I clenched my fists, released them, clenched and released, trying to work out the unbearable tightness to set some kind of rhythm for my breathing instead of the horrible, rough gasping. Laughing voices drifted down the hall from the big room, at odds with the screaming inside of my head. I don't know how it happened, only that my vision blurred. By the time it finally cleared, I was standing inside Alban's office with no memory of getting there. When I turned, there were two figures standing in the doorway, shoulder to shoulder, wearing mirrored expressions of concern. They seemed to communicate a whole conversation in a single look.
"So," Vida began, "what did we miss?"
17.
"When did you get in?"
The question bounced off the walls of the tunnel as Vida, Chubbs, and a newly arrived Cole and I all walked toward the bar.
"Why didn't you let us know you were so close? You do actually have Lillian, right?"
"Oh, we have her,"
Chubbs said, his gaze drifting over to Vida.
"And an explanation for not calling."
She let out a huff, crossing her arms over her chest.
"It was an accident."
"Yes, well..."
He pushed his glasses up the bridge of his nose delicately.
"The burner phone we had accidentally fell out of the car, and someone accidentally backed over it, because someone was in a rush after she accidentally alerted some skip tracers we were nearby when she accidentally used her abilities to move a light pole out of the road after she had accidentally backed into it."
"Someone better shut their mouth before I accidentally slam my fist into their teeth."
She punched his shoulder, and it was almost playful.
"Shut his mouth, fist into his teeth.
Really, a grammar lesson."
As we climbed the ladder, I let Cole explain what had happened during the Oasis hit. I felt too newly bruised to articulate what I needed to say, and... worse, the heaviness in my skull made me feel like I was trapped underwater. I couldn't look Chubbs in the eye, no matter what he did to slyly get my attention. Liam would tell him the whole story, and he would side with his friend, and I just couldn't. I couldn't with anything that didn't directly relate to Lillian Gray or Thurmond. Vida led the four of us out of the bar's back room and into the main one. Everything had been boarded up, the useful things like plates and glasses brought down into the ranch. The shadows were so pervasive, I almost missed the small form cowering in the far back corner booth. She wore jeans that were clearly too big for her, and a button-down shirt that must have belonged to a man. All of her blonde hair was tucked up into a Braves baseball cap. She took in her surroundings with a lethal stillness, alert and assessing. The hardness in her eyes, her stance, they were all in her son, too. The sight was enough to halt my steps, turn my blood to ice. I'd always thought that Clancy physically resembled his father, but the details, the tapping of her finger against her crossed arms. She didn't say a word, but I heard her voice all the same, the echo of what I'd picked up in her son's mind. Clancy, my sweet Clancy. I sucked in a sharp breath.
They weren't keeping her inside of Kansas HQ, Vida said. She was in one of the smaller perimeter buildings. We only knew how to find her because we picked up on radio transmissions between the agents talking about the arrangements to trade her for the agents Gray's men picked up. They kept the agents alive specifically to get her back. So, you were wrong, asswipe, she informed Cole. And this better be damn well worth it, because I could have had Kate back and not Looney Tunes over there.
Cole nodded and stepped forward, approaching the woman with all the care and cautiousness afforded to a spooked animal.
Hi, Dr. Gray. You're safe here.
She either didn't understand or she didn't care, throwing his hand off her. She turned to bolt toward the door. The way she pounded her fists against the worn wood made my own hands ache.
Pale.
Out. Car. More. Now. Now. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. The words barely sounded like words. They were emphasized and accented strangely, the way someone would talk around a full mouth, or if their tongue was clamped between teeth. I turned back toward Vida, who only gave a tired sigh.
For someone who can't talk or understand for shit, she is a major pain in the ass.
She's talking, though. I was interrupted by her guttural cry as Cole lifted her up and tried to pin her arms to her side.
She doesn't understand anything. We tried writing, speaking slowly, different languages,
Chubb said, rubbing his chin.
If there's anything left inside of her head, she can't get it out.
There's a difference between broken and ruined. With one, you can hope to piece the object back together, but the other, there's just no coming back. I pressed my face against my hands, giving up on trying to meet Lillian Gray's dark eyes as they roved around the senior quarters we'd given her. She'd come into the ranch yesterday afternoon, terrified, and she'd spent the whole of the morning exactly that way, shaking like we'd dunked her into the Atlantic in the middle of January. It was a wonder she hadn't passed out from exhaustion yet. Inside her mind, I couldn't describe it. There was actually nothing to describe. The first time I'd slipped into her memories, I'd immediately yanked myself back out, dizzy enough that I almost threw up. It was so cluttered, bright flashes of images flashing in no order, speeding by in a quarter of a second, too quick for me to latch on to anything. The intensity of it all was like sitting in a car that jumped from 0 to 100. It threw me back against my seat, even as I wondered if she was doing it on purpose.
Dr. Gray,
I said sharply, trying to drag her attention back to me. Can you tell me what your first name is?
Name-y,
she muttered, hands cupping the rim of the baseball cap.
Don't. Good.
Pale. Shade.
God,
Senator Cruz said, covering her face with her hands.
How can the two of you stand it? This poor woman.
Cole pushed himself off of where he'd been leaning against the opposite wall.
I think that's enough for the day, Jim.
But I haven't made any progress.
Maybe there just isn't any progress to make,
Senator Cruz offered, a hand on my back. The former First Lady had been the only thing important enough to drag her out of the senior agent quarters she'd been given, away from Rosa. I almost wished she hadn't come, because it was bad enough feeling disappointed in myself. It was gutting to think I was disappointing her, after all she'd done for us. I haven't even been trying for 2 full days, I insisted.
At least give me another afternoon.
Lillian Gray repositioned herself so she was lying down on the small bed, her face turned into the pillow. I could feel the frustration pouring off her, and didn't try to catch her hand as she slammed it into the plastic-covered mattress over and over. I sighed, rubbing my forehead. All right, we'll take a break.
How much should we tell the others about her condition? Senator Cruz asked.
Vida and Chubbs had promised to be tight-lipped, to claim the woman was exhausted and needed rest, if pressed by any of the kids. It only bought me a little time to figure out how to help her. Being upfront with the others wasn't an option that was in the cards for me. If they saw that Lillian Gray, their one shot at deciphering all the research and data we had about the cure, was like this, it wasn't going to do anything other than swing them more firmly to Liam's side. The side that seemed like it was actually doing something. From the moment we'd left Los Angeles, Cole and I had banked on having information about the cause and cure of IAAN to prove ourselves to the kids. But 3 weeks later, we had nothing to show that we'd delivered on our promises. Even the kids we'd pulled from Oasis spent more time in the garage than they did in the ranch proper. The only time I saw them was when they came to the kitchen to pick up their meals, and even then they brought their food back into the garage to eat.
I'm going to turn the door handle around so it locks from the outside, Cole said. If we tell the kids to leave her alone, they will.
If they ever bother leaving the garage. I'm worried about the agents. Kate, I said. What's the reaction going to be when they realize that the League doesn't have her to barter with anymore?
The League will keep up appearances as long as humanly possible, Cole assured me. And I told you what Harry said. He and a few others from his old Special Forces unit are going to investigate the reports of a black site prison near Tucson. Dusting off the Green Berets, apparently.
How Harry had managed to find out about a black site, which by its definition didn't exist in any formal records, was beyond me. I didn't want to press Cole on it in front of Senator Cruz.
That's promising, she said, giving me a faint smile.
I shook my head. It was barely anything at all. I removed Lillian's hat and dirty tennis shoes and tried to ease her under the blankets. Her face was gaunt as she looked up at me, but there were still traces of the rare beauty she had been. Her eyes narrowed, and suddenly I wasn't seeing her, but her son.
Alvin would want you here with us, Cole told the woman gently. You have friends here. Friends. Safe.
Alvin?
Lillian sat straight up, her legs tangling in the blankets I'd carefully arranged for her.
John!
Cole and I exchanged a sharp look, but just as quickly, she fell back into muttering nonsense beneath her breath.
Hap. The. Mo.
He moved to the small desk just to the right of the entrance, opening the drawer.
Dr. Gray, we have some things for you to look at after you get some rest. I'm just going to leave them here. They might be a little, difficult. There's a chart.
Charts.
He held them up so she could see, and the woman? The reaction was instant. She sat straight up and reached for them.
Cerebellum. Pineal body. Thalamus. Interventricular foramen.
The quality of her voice completely changed. It was sharp, almost aware. There was a refined edge to it, too, as if she molded each word on her tongue before she said it.
Okay, Cole said, stretching the word out. That was unexpected.
And then the woman turned over on her other side and promptly passed out. Cole started to move toward the door, but I stayed exactly where I was, staring at her prone form. I'm not sure what made me want to try. Only that I'd had enough of a chance to process what I'd seen in her head to suddenly be curious about it.
What?
Cole asked, sounding further and further away as I slipped into her mind. The touch was as gentle as I could manage, and instead of trying to navigate the gleaming scenes that popped up behind my eyelids, I let myself be taken along their flow. I saw textbooks stacked high on a desk, young people in clothing decades out of fashion, movies flickering on screens in the dark, test grades, a bouquet of white roses that matched the dress she wore, that I wore, a younger, handsome version of the president waiting for her at the end of a long aisle strung with ropes of flowers. Hospitals, machines, playgrounds, baby clothes, a child with black hair sitting at a kitchen table, his back toward me. All of these small moments of memory were cohesive, flowing as smoothly as if I had been guiding them with my own hand. It shifted then, all of these glimpses into her life. Splotches of rainbow color exploded over the scenes, and I was falling backward through white mist, nothing above or below me. A dream. She was deep enough in sleep now to relax both her mind and her body. When I pulled back out of her mind and away from her bed, she didn't stir at all.
"What?" Cole asked. "What did you see?"
I saw a mind that worked, that had whole, cohesive memories, and I was more confused than ever. "I think," I began, rising up from my knees, "I need to talk to Chubbs." Either anticipating the need, or just by virtue of his own curiosity, Chubbs was in the computer room, sitting at one of the empty desks near the front of the room. Tall stacks of thick, intimidating books were piled around him like fortress walls. A few of the Greens had taken the laptops down into the garage to work on Liam's and Alice's projects, but Nico was still there, as he always was. He saw me before Chubbs did, and by the expression on his face, I knew I needed to talk to him first.
"Three things," he said. "First, it's done."
"What we talked about?" I asked him. He held up a plain black flash drive on a string around his neck.
"All I need is to find a smaller size, one I can use to modify and work into glasses frames."
"You're the best," I said, meaning it sincerely. Cole had been right. Nico was our man, and not just because he had something to prove. He flushed a bit, squirming at the praise, then lowered his voice drastically.
"The second thing, the other thing we talked about?"
"We've talked about a lot of things," I reminded him. Nico clicked around, bringing up the now familiar server log.
"Someone sent something? Again?" "An email, 2 days ago. The night before you left for Oasis. This IP is from one of the laptops, while it was still here, in this room," he continued. "It went to an address that's now been deleted."
"Maybe someone was making contact with Amplify?" I asked, not bothering to hide the bitterness in my voice. He shrugged.
"Again, the simplest explanation is usually the right one."
My eyes narrowed slightly. "But you don't believe that, do you?"
"It's just suspicious. Liam made it sound like they only interacted with Amplify in person, so I'm not sure who would be leaking files to them now, or why. This one only stuck out to me because it was a simple message. Do you think it could have been Cole?"
"I'll ask," I said.
"I don't know how he's been contacting his stepfather." "This is a pretty secure way of doing it," Nico said approvingly. "And Liam and the others didn't hide any of their activity when they sent the media package out last night."
"They got it together that fast?" I asked flatly. "Did any of it take with the press?"
"Well, that's the third thing."
He clicked into a folder on the desktop, bringing up yet another new window.
"All of it is offline now. Gray's sensors shut the major news sites down until they stripped the story, But the photos and video have been popping up on hundreds of message boards, as well as several of the flash sites that Amplify feeds out to the net. They throw up hundreds of versions of the exact same site with different domain names and search terms embedded in the coding, so that at least one of them will pop up depending on the keywords that people are inputting. I did screenshots of everything I could find, in case you wanted to see it.
He put up the screenshot of CNN's homepage as an example. The feature not only was on the main page, it took up half of it. Tiled photos of the exterior of the camp, the children with their faces blurred coming out of the bunks, our backs as we ran down the hallway in those last moments, heading for the door. The largest of the photos was of the wall, the dozens of red handprints that, if you were only scrolling by, could have been mistaken for blood. The headline under which everything fell was, "No Oasis, an inside look at a rehabilitation camp."
"They also showed this video," Nico said.
The moment it loaded, from the very first frozen screen, I knew exactly what it would be of. I couldn't see my face. Alice had filmed it all from behind me, so that she would have a clear shot of the children coming out of the rooms. "My name is..." The audio recording beeped straight through my name. "I'm one of you. All of us here are like you, except the woman with the camera. We're getting you out of here, taking you to somewhere safe. But we have to move, fast. Fast as you can, without hurting yourselves or anyone around you. Follow them. Fast, 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 okay?" I gripped the edge of the desk hard enough that Nico leaned back as he said,
"I take it they didn't ask you before they used this footage?"
"They did not." And this, too, felt personal. It felt like they were throwing it back in my face. The rest of the video was shots spliced together out of order, the bound and gagged PSFs, a close-up of their uniforms, equipment with military decals, smart choices to try to lend it additional authenticity.
"From the comments I read on the different message boards, it sounds like at least two major papers picked up the story. By the time I tried streaming the TV news, though, there were already government people analyzing it, pointing things out that supposedly made it fake. Did you know they released a list of kids, too? Individual photographs of them and what their parents did for the Federal Coalition?"
"I didn't," I said, gritting my teeth. "Did Cole see this?"
"Yeah, he was in here watching with me earlier," Nico said. "Look, they're probably all down there patting themselves on the back for this, but the truth is, it didn't stick. Less than 20 minutes after it went up, Gray scrubbed the web. Not only that, but a number of web hosting companies were taken offline. The comments on the forums, look, like this one,"
he pointed to the timestamp,
"from early this morning when the news broke."
The post read, "This is sickening. Are they all like this?"
"And 2 hours later," Nico said, "the tone of the comments changed.
This has to be a hoax. It's too perfectly put together. I could do this in my backyard with a few actors." The post below it read, "Then how did they get images of the kids? Old stock images? Old movies?
Have you never heard of Photoshop?" "A lot of people don't think this is real," Nico said. "Part of the problem is that we don't have a name or identity as a group. We couldn't claim responsibility for this and then back it up with a history of other information dumps. Amplify is only known for boosting information that's already been released by third parties. That's where their name comes from. And even they haven't had enough big breaks to seem wholly credible to the general population."
"But people at least saw the images," I said. No matter how Nico spun it, that was a small victory. Because now, when others thought of the camps, these images were likely the first thing that would spring to mind.
"This isn't going to bring Thurmond down,"
Nico said, his dark eyes flashing.
"I believe in our plan. It's the only option.
Thanks, Nico, I said, squeezing his shoulder. Keep me updated, okay? He nodded and turned back to his computer, fingers flying over the keyboard. I stood and made my way back over to Chubb's. He was partially angled in the direction of Nico's computer, wearing the expression of someone who'd been pretending not to listen, even as they heard everything.
I'm surprised you're not working in the garage, I told him, taking the empty seat next to him.
I have no idea what you mean by that, Chubb said, though it was clear that he now had the full picture, or at least Liam's half of what had happened.
I'm sure you don't, I said, but if that's where you want to be... I can understand you picking Liam's side. Everyone else did.
Even Zoo. Even Zoo. His hands came slapping down against the desk.
There is one side. That is the side of friendship and trust and love, and that is the side that everyone should be on. And I am refusing to acknowledge that any other side could exist. Do you understand?
I blinked.
Yes.
Though, Chubb said, I am inclined, being co-founder of Team Reality, to think the garage is being overly idealistic about how easily this will play out for them, as evidenced by your discussion with Nico.
What does Vida think? I asked.
Vi is down in the gym right now, he said, not in the garage. And she is, by her nature, inclined to the side that involves guns and explosions.
I nodded, then motioned toward the books, all of which, now that I was closer, seemed to be medical texts. Are you trying to figure out what's wrong with Dr. Gray?
Yes, he said. Did you make any progress on that front?
I met his weak smile with one of my own. It's the weirdest thing, I told him. When I tried to look into her mind while she was awake, everything was racing, really intense colors and sounds and images that moved so fast. But when I tried again when she was asleep, they were real memories, coherent, whole.
Were you able to stay in her mind for long? The first time, I mean.
No, it made me feel sick. He nodded, taking that in.
Maybe that was the point. That's the only way she knows how to keep oranges out.
That was my thought, too.
It makes sense. If you knew you had a son capable of coming in and making a mess of everything inside of your skull, wouldn't you try to teach yourself a few ways to block him out? Protect yourself?
Someone intelligent and determined enough to come up with a cure for this sickness would have taken every precaution against it.
So her memories are in there, and they're not damaged.
Chubbs trailed off, running his finger down the side of one of the open textbooks. Where did you get these? I asked, picking up the nearest brick-like book.
A bookstore, he said, then added quickly, after hours. Vida took them for me since I was too chicken shit to get out of the car.
I'm glad you stopped, I said, flipping through its pages. Most of them were on anatomy, but several, including the one he was looking through now, were neuro-this and neuro-that, all with pictures of the human mind on the cover. He looked up, an unreadable expression on his face.
Clancy can... He can break into a person's mind, right? What can he do once he's inside?
I thought about it. Influence their feelings, keep them frozen so they can't move, and project images into their head so they're seeing something that's not there. Another voice chimed in.
He can also...
Chubbs and I pivoted toward Nico, who looked like he wanted nothing more than to dive back behind the wide computer monitor.
It's not just that he can make them freeze up. He can move people around, like they're toys. I saw him do it to the researchers at Thurmond a few times. He'd jump into their minds mid-conversation to listen to what others were saying. It was really hard for him to keep up. The last time he tried it, he slept a full day to recover.
He would get terrible migraines, so he had to stop.
Chubbs gave me a look I read perfectly. Migraines, not human decency.
Can he affect someone's memories?
Chubbs asked.
Can he erase them? Actually, I don't think you're erasing them so much as suppressing them, but can he manipulate someone's memories?
He can see someone's memories. I caught myself, half stunned by the realization that slammed into me. He only ever saw my memories when I let him in. I don't think he could do it on his own. The real reason he tried teaching me control at East River was because he wanted to figure out how I was doing it.
That other orange kid you knew, what could he do?
Martin. My skin crawled at the thought of him.
He manipulated people's feelings.
Chubbs looked intrigued, flipping back through the book to a diagram of each section of the brain.
That's fascinating. You're all using different parts of a person's mind against them. Sorry, that came out the wrong way.
I held up a hand. It's fine.
This is complicated to explain, but even though the mind has many different structures within it, they all work together in different ways. So it's not really that you're accessing different sections of the brain, but different systems within it. Like the frontal lobe plays a part in making and retaining memories, but so does the medial temporal lobe. Does that make sense?
Sort of. So you think I'm somehow interrupting different parts of that process, depending on what I'm doing?
Right, he said. My understanding is that memory is many different systems, all of which function in slightly different ways. Creation, for instance, or bringing one to mind, even storing.
He picked up the book in front of him.
The memory of what this object is, how to lift it, how to read the pages, how I feel about it, all different systems. My best guess is that when you remove someone's memories, you're not removing them at all, just disrupting a few of these key systems and rerouting the real memories to imagined ones. Or disrupting the encoding process before the memory can take shape and the neurotransmitters work, so the person can't...
Okay. But how do you jump between different systems, control other functions?
I don't know, Chubbs said. How did you do it to Clancy?
That brought me up short.
You froze him the same way he froze Liam and Vi. What did you do differently?
It was the intent, I guess. I went completely still and wanted him to do the same. The words choked off. Mirror minds. That's what he had told me when I couldn't figure out how to get back out of the darkness there, sever the thread between us. Once I brought up a memory, my grip on his mind shifted back to his memories. When I went still and wanted him to do the same, he did. I explained the theory to Chubbs, who nodded.
It sort of makes sense. When you intentionally go into a person's memories, you're using the memory of how to do it rather than a memory itself. Wow, that sounded less confusing inside my head. Anyway, it involves being vulnerable to the other person having access to your memories. Some sort of natural empathy on your end. I can't imagine him being willing to run the risk of releasing any part of the control he has over his mind, or that he possesses a shred of empathy. Do you want to experiment with this? Maybe we can see if you can get me to move my hand.
No, I said, horrified. I just want to know what system or part of her mind he affected to leave her like this. Chubbs sat back, his excitement still there, verging on gleeful.
It's going to take me a little time to find the answer. I'll have to go through all of these books.
Hey, losers!
Vida said from the doorway, still flushed and dripping with sweat from her workout.
I think you're going to want to see what they're working on in the garage.
18. It took me a moment to even understand what I was seeing as we approached. Duct tape held up two white sheets as a backdrop behind Zoo, who was perched on a folding chair. She glowed under the flood of light from four desk lamps that had all been turned and angled toward her. They'd set up a poor man's version of a studio in the corner of the room. There were two other chairs. The one facing her, next to the camera, was for Alice, who was fiddling with the device. The other was for Liam, who sat to Zoo's right, talking to her quietly. He was the one that spotted us first, and scowled.
"What's going on?" Chubbs asked, trying to take in the scene.
"Suzume's agreed to do an interview with us," Alice said, craning her neck around to look at us.
She was still dressed in all black, but her hair was twisted now into a messy bun. Next to her were two different notebooks, each open to a page full of scribbles and blue ink. She had a third in her lap.
"Cole said you only get one shot to prove this would work."
I almost said it, but it felt petty. After only a few hours, there was no real way to measure the full impact of the first media package they'd already released.
"Is there a problem?"
Liam asked. Vida let out a whistle, as if already predicting how this situation was going to play out. But contrary to what Liam apparently thought, I wasn't here to pick a fight. "Zoo," I said, "can I talk to you, just for a second?" She nodded immediately, and I felt tension release its hold on my stomach. I led her a little way away from the others.
"Are you okay doing this?"
I asked. She gave me a bright nod and held up her fingers in an okay sign.
"And you understand that if you do this, your face will be all over the place. They explained that, right?"
I didn't want her to think I was treating her like a kid incapable of making her own decisions, and I didn't want to imply that Liam would ever purposefully trick her, but I needed the confirmation from her. My first instinct with the others, no matter what, would always be to act like a shield, positioning myself between them and the prying eyes of the world. And Zoo, being Zoo, seemed to understand. She slid the small, narrow notebook out of her pocket and wrote,
"I can't fight, right? Not at Oasis? Not at Thurmond?"
When I shook my head, she didn't seem upset by it, just resigned.
"This is the only way I can think of to do something. I want to help."
"I hope you don't think I haven't noticed or appreciated all that you've done here at the ranch so far," I said. Zoo kept writing.
"What happened yesterday made me realize it's important to speak up and say your piece, what you believe in."
"Liam has that effect on people," I said quietly. She took my arm and moved her thumb from the corner of the page so I could see what else she had written.
"I want to be strong, like you. I want to do this to help you get what you want. I'm tired of being scared. I don't want them to win."
The words stole the pain in my heart away, just for a little while. I managed to smile at her and hugged her tight enough that she let out a silent, shuddering laugh.
"Okay," I said. "Liam's talking for you?"
She nodded.
"I told him he could, as long as he wasn't in the shot. He said it was okay, but I don't want anyone to go looking for his family because of this."
"What about your family?"
"My family is here."
I bit my lip. "You're right. We are. And for what it's worth, I think you're going to knock 'em dead." Zoo scribbled something down in her notebook and held it up for me to see.
"I will. I've been practicing. Will you stay and watch?"
"Of course." Chubbs and Vida were still standing where I'd left them, talking quietly to each other, their backs turned to Liam. They stepped away from each other as I came closer, and the quiet conversation between Liam and Alice ended the moment Zoo sat back down. I felt Liam's eyes flick to me, just for a moment, but I kept my own eyes on Zoo, gave her an encouraging little smile when she glanced over one last time.
"Ready?" Liam asked. I have paper and a pen for her to write with, Alice said, picking up one of the bigger notebooks from the floor and holding it out to her. She can tell me to stop at any point, and I will. She and I shook on it. I know. Go ahead.
Liam's jaw worked back and forth, but he said nothing. Alice waited only a moment for me to lodge another protest before she turned. From where I stood behind her, I could watch as she switched her camera over from still photos to video. Zoo couldn't fix her eyes on the camera lens for long, not without a look of wariness. I watched as she adjusted her plain white shirt and jeans, folded and unfolded her hands in her lap, crossed and uncrossed her ankles.
Okay, sweetheart. Make sure you write nice and big so Liam can easily read it. If you don't want to answer anything, just shake your head. Okay?
Great. Let's start off with two easy ones.
Can you tell me your name and age, please?
Zoo scribbled the words down, looking relieved to finally not have to stare at the camera. I thought that was the only reason she bothered writing, even though Liam clearly knew the answer to both of the questions.
My name is Suzume, he said, and I'm 13 years old.
Suzume? That's a lovely name.
Thank you, Liam read. My friends call me Zoo.
Can you tell us a little bit about why your friend is speaking for you? Zoo looked away from the camera, over to where we were standing. I saw the small movement in the corner of my eye, the way Vida gave her a low, quick thumbs up. I've been practicing.
Because for a long time I was too scared to say anything,
Zoo said.
And I didn't think anyone would listen.
Liam jumped as if she'd shot him in the chest, his face pale with shock. The world ceased to spin under my feet for that first second when her sweet, high voice emerged. It was slightly halting, edged with the nerves she wasn't letting anyone see on her face. So different, too, from the way it sounded when she had talked in her sleep, not scratchy with disuse.
I did it,
she said, almost in wonder.
Yeah, you did! Get it, girl!
Vida said, and her loud clapping was the only sound that emerged in the silence that followed. The kids who'd been watching the interview happen from where they sat fanned out on the floor to the side looked, in a word, stunned. Chubbs moved quickly, shoving past me, Vida, and Alice, who'd started to rise to her feet to reset the camera, and all but slammed into Zoo. His face as he hugged her was a portrait of pure joy, and he didn't bother trying to hide the evidence of the tears that were beginning to track down his face.
I'm trying to do an interview,
Zoo complained, her voice muffled by his shirt. After a moment, she relented, patting his back.
Okay, Charlie, Vida said. Let the girl finish before you try to drown her in tears. Come on.
She carefully extracted him from the interview space, guiding him back around to where I stood, where the rest of his embrace was transferred to me. And I was more than a little glad for the excuse to look away from Zoo to deal with the tears that were starting to well up behind my own lashes.
Why is everyone acting like crazy people?
She said. And already her voice was getting steadier, stronger.
Can we start again?
Liam stood up, about to drag his chair away, when she grabbed his hand and said something quietly to him. I couldn't see his expression at first, not with his back to us, but I caught a glimpse of it as he pulled his chair over to the other side of the camera, and my throat ached with the pride there, the happiness. He sat back down, and Zoo immediately reoriented herself so she was angled toward him instead of the reporter. Her whole posture changed, relaxing enough for her to start swinging her legs back and forth.
This okay?
Liam asked, both to her and Alice. The reporter nodded, merely crossing the next two questions off her list.
Her next questions were about Zoo's color classification and what she could do. It led naturally into a bigger question.
Were you sent to a camp by your parents, or were you picked up?
I made my father's car. I killed its engine.